you guys feel free to ask questions because I'm a student minister at heart. That's my calling in lots of ways. Well, God is my calling, but he's given me the opportunity to express that calling in lots of avenues in student ministry over the last years. I won't tell you how long. And then I have this incredible opportunity to work on a larger level in terms of the denomination of Southern Baptist in helping students connect with our missionaries, help missionaries use our students in strategic ways, all that kind of cool stuff. Eric, on the other hand, is a real live missionary, just like John Piper was talking about, made the full plunge of what it's like to live in another culture, take him and his family and embrace a people group and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully between the two of us, we can kind of address some issues that can touch your heart and help God help, you know, speak into you and your circumstances on that. So I won't get much into what was in my slideshow, but I do want to make a real quick point. One Life is all about embracing the both sides of the gospel. And that is, when we think about the gospel, a lot of times we think about it as being a spiritual message to change someone spiritually. But when you look at the life of Jesus, Jesus both preached and healed. And so he not only addressed this huge spiritual need in people's lives, he also was not oblivious to wherever they were physically, socially, emotionally, okay? And I want you to see that. We don't have time to really get deep into that, but it's the kind of the underlying basis of why we chose to elevate this program, this element at IMB called One Life, is because we recognize that more and more people are waking up to the fact that you can swing the pendulum too far either way. You can be all about trying to meet human needs and not address the most important need of their life, which is to know Jesus Christ and to be saved and to have a relationship with God that lasts into eternity. You can swing the pendulum the other, and so you fail to meet their basic needs. And so one of the things that's happening today is we're recognizing that it's incredibly important to God, not only give people Jesus, but to maybe help give them a job or help them in their situation where their physical needs are going unmet, and to be part of the people of God who are making a difference in all aspects of life, okay? So I don't know if I need to preach that to you, because I think that's part of your generation. And when I say that, I kind of combine all of you into a pool of folks that are more in tune than ever before to the social needs, to justice issues, those kinds of things. And so we're looking at how do we bring those two together, okay? So that's kind of the one of the genesis behind One Life. The other side of it is, how do you wrap your mind around something as big as poverty? It's just huge. Or sex trafficking. It's amazingly huge. What if you could break that down into one small unit, one place where stuff is happening? So there's people on the ground that are engaging in that, and they're also bringing the gospel to bear on that. Could you get behind that? Could you jump on that page? Well, that's what One Life is doing, is connecting specifically with missionaries from IMB that are working in a very specific place in a very specific kind of way. And we want to give you a way to connect. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but that's kind of laying the groundwork. Eric, talk to us a little bit. I'm going to pass the microphone because they're recording this session. Why don't you talk to them about your experience and why you embrace One Life, and why you're doing that. If you'd also talk about her question about what is it like to engage people of another culture and sharing the gospel.
Yeah. So, like you guys heard, so I live in India right now, you know, and so like the One Slum Project is just one example of how One Life is making an impact, and just to meet people where they're at, you know, and it's crazy because, you know, there's poor people here in America, right? There's poor people here, you know, but in India, it's in your face, you know, it's just like you have just like, so Mumbai has literally some of the richest people in the entire world. The most expensive house in the entire world is in Mumbai, India. You know, it's just like, and right next to those houses, slums. If you're in any high-rise building, you're gonna see slums all around you. It's amazing. You know, and those people are just impoverished. You know, and And so it's just an awesome way for us just to be able to serve and really to mobilize the local people to serve and minister. And, you know, and so like when I first went over, like went overseas, like those of you, how many of you guys have been overseas somewhere? Right. So, okay, so you guys have been overseas. Is it kind of crazy to go overseas? Is it kind of weird? I mean, yeah, I mean, kind of crazy enough. So, like, a couple of days ago, I had a 10-hour layover in New York. And so it's just, so I'm thinking, like, okay, you know, I live in a city that's, like, makes New York look small, you know? But then I'm just like, okay, this is, you know, there's still some anxiety. I don't know how to get on the train by myself. I don't know how to do these different things, you know? But at least I have the language, you know? And you're asking, like, about language. So if you guys come on a trip, then I know, like, the people, especially, like, if you're coming with the IMB, the people you're going to be working with, it's going to be one of two things. You're either going to be with the translator, or they'll put you in an area where people speak English, or people are trying to speak English, you know, and so you use that as a way. And so whenever people come, then usually it's, like, two Americans, like two foreigners, and then two local and one local person who's a translator for you. And a lot of times those are just like average people, you know, people who are like you, but they're Indians living in India. You know that, okay, you know, you love Jesus, you go to church, but maybe you don't, you know, you're not spending every waking hour like sharing the gospel with your neighbors and your friends. But it's a great way to like kind of help them take a step into sharing the gospel with people around them, just by being a translator. One Life has been awesome, and you guys got this sheet of like just all around the world, like all kinds of different projects that are happening. And so, in even like with the slum, like the One Slum Project, and it's just like, well, you know, one like an area that we go into, it's just like, well, we thought we'd start with, going into like do like to teach kids, but it's like we realized after talking to people in the slums, in these two slums right next to each other, that man, almost all the guys are alcoholics. It's like that's a huge problem in these areas, and so we're gonna help to reach those areas by doing some alcohol abuse awareness kind of stuff there. And one of the church planters, he's a former drunk, you know, and now he serves Jesus and he loves Jesus. And so it's kind of a awesome thing that God's kind of put together in that.
Eric, you said something about how poverty's here too, but it's a little bit different over there, okay? Can you go a little bit deeper into that? I mean, you know, if I jump off a plane in Mumbai and you start showing me around, you know, in what ways will you expect that I probably will be surprised or maybe even emotionally changed by that experience?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, like, there's just, you know, here you have people like, I don't know if you have it in, like, Louisville here or not, but, like, you know, you see people, like, begging and stuff like that. But they're just kind of sitting there just waiting for money. But, man, beggars are all over India. I mean, and they come up to you, and these little kids, they're just pulling at you. And how many, have you guys seen Slumdog Millionaire? Yeah, that's a little bit more like a documentary than like a movie. You know, it's just like there's so much reality in that movie. And you just see people on the side of the roads, just like, I mean, they're just sleeping there. I mean, they have nothing else. And like little like schools, like classrooms are just meeting on the side of the road. And it's just like, man, these are like the slum kids who are actually getting an education, which a lot of them are actually, but it's just in a school like that. But it's just like, man, these people have no choice. You know, it's just like when they're trying to rip you off, like they're selling stuff on the street and they're trying to charge you 3-4 times the amount. Man, I don't blame them. They got nothing. You know, they literally don't know where any food is coming from. You know, whereas America, you've got a lot of things that, you know, you have homeless shelters, you have things like that that do give out food. You know, now, granted, I'm blessed no matter where you put me in the world. You know, I'm glad that I'm not begging for money in any country, so, yeah.
Let me ask you this question. Okay, so you get plopped down into Mumbai with your family, and you don't get the whole city, but you get, you know, a little chunk of only about 3 million people. How do you deal with the idea of the need is so large and it's just you? I mean, how do you reconcile that amazing pressure, oh my gosh, I'm here to save all these people, or, you know, because we're sharing some significant needs when we talk to people about One Life and other places in the world as well, and it's a little overwhelming. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, you know, I thought Dr. Piper did a great job, you know, just talking about, like missionaries are like the sent out ones. You know, like in the Bible, it talks about, like, you know, like Paul being sent out. You know, it talks about like Barnabas being sent out, Silas being sent out. Like those are people who have been chosen for that specific work. And so we're going and we're doing that work, and but we're there to raise up local leaders. You know, and so like that's the only way that I'm just like, you know, it kind of forces me, because I know, okay, if I went and started my own church and I was the pastor of a church and I had my congregation, even if my church was 2,000 people, if I had a big mega church, really what difference would that make in a city of 22 million? I mean, who can do, I mean, if it's 2,000 people, that's like, I don't know, a fraction of a percentage. You know, like, it's just a tiny amount. But, what's your name?
Matthew.
But if I teach Matthew and I'm pouring into Matthew and I say, Matthew, you are a man of God, and Jesus said to go and make disciples of all nations. And Matthew says, I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means to make a disciple. It's just like, well, and for most of my life, I didn't know what it meant either. But I say, well, it means, Jesus says, teaching people to obey what I've commanded. So I disciple Matthew. He gets a couple of his friends together and he starts discipling them. Maybe they're believers, maybe they're not. But he's teaching them how to go and make disciples. And so then they go and they make disciples, and his disciples make other disciples, and those disciples make other disciples. And it's multiplication. You know, and that's what God wanted. That's part of his plan. Multiplication is throughout nature. It's throughout, you know, it's just like my parents had two kids. All right, well, and then I've got three kids. My kids are going to have more kids. It's those generations. And that's how we're supposed to be with discipleship. And it's just like, man, so Mumbai is so huge. I can drive for 3 hours and still not have made it to the other side of the city. It's huge. And it's daunting. Really, it's daunting. And when we first got to Mumbai, we were the only people there from the IMB. And so I did feel like I had the weight of 22 million people. But then I also know God's sovereign, right? And God's going to bring those people to Christ. And he's already working there.
One of the things that your generation deals with is information overload. It's beamed at you like crazy. There's so much stuff coming at you that you have to filter it. You have to, you know, you have an uncanny ability to multitask. Now, I don't know where you are on New York, but in my age, you know, if you got the TV playing and two guys over here playing ping pong and I'm trying to study for a class, I'm kind of going nuts. You guys, that's the world you live in. You're cool with that. You know what I'm saying? But part of it's because you've been able to screen stuff out and zero in on whatever's important. Well, in screening that out, it's not only a defense or survival mechanism, but one of the things it does is it also means you don't hear certain things that you might need to listen to. You know what I mean? And so one of the things, you know, we want you to understand is that, yeah, there's a lot of messages coming at you, but you've got to be active in that filtering process and how, you know, what you need to hang on to and grab a hold of. There's this whole idea of overwhelming need is coming at you, and you tend to just shut down and go, I can't do that. I can't tackle 22 million people. I can't save the whole world. But you know what? You don't have to. Let me tell you a little story to help you understand that. It's an old story, but it's about a little boy that was going up and down the beach after a storm. That storm had washed ashore just a whole bunch of starfish, and they were basically suffocating and dying on the beach. And the little boy was weeping and picking up starfish and throwing them back into the ocean. There was an old man strolling, taking his morning walk down the beach, and he saw the young boy just frantic, trying to throw these starfish back in the ocean, and he stopped the little boy and he said, Son, don't you see there's millions of starfish? What good are you doing? And the little boy looked at him and said, I'm doing good for this one, and threw it back. And I think that's part of what you've got to do is realize, no, you're not going to save millions of people. At least we don't know that. But you can do something for one. And that's where you start. That's kind of where the One Life thought also comes from. Okay? is that even if your whole life is a matter of impacting one person, that means your life has been worth it, you know? You know, I think you'll have more influence than that, more influence than you possibly can imagine. But it starts there. And here's the problem. Many people haven't even started yet. And I wonder if that's where you're at. You're still kind of sitting on the prepare mode, the I'm still getting ready mode, the I'm not grown up yet mode, like John Piper was talking about. And the problem with that is that, so when? When are you going to cross that magic threshold of you're ready? You know what I mean? And so one of the things we try to say to young people especially is, it starts now. The whole idea of whether you're going to be a missionary or be on mission or be in ministry doesn't happen someday. It happens now. And you look for that, and you wake up to those opportunities that are there. Let me show you our website. So you can, and that it looks a lot like the sheet you've got in front of you, but it's this is a little bit old right here. But if you were to go on that website, you'd see the list of current projects that are One Life projects. Just to tell you a little bit more about them, every one of them is connected to someone like Eric, okay, in a particular place in the world, who is working there, part of a team effort, long-term effort, and welcoming somebody like you to come on board as an advocate. What does an advocate do? Well, an advocate is more than just a kind of a show up one day and go on the net. It's someone who gets on board and says, I want to share this burden. Someone who starts praying over this, who gets in touch with us and our missionary, who starts thinking, how can I support this? There are ways to give. We work through BGR, which is Baptist Global Response. It's a part of who we are as a denomination. But it's like, if you've heard of disaster relief, it's kind of like an international version of that. And those guys make it possible for us to send funds directly to a project. So if there's a giving mechanism related to any one of these, if you raise support, get money to that, like you get your student group somewhere to do a fundraiser, or like the Arkansas State Campus Ministry took on this One Water project and decided they wanted to raise enough money to build and restore a well in a certain village, and it was going to cost $563. So they did an awareness campaign on their campus, a state school campus. And they had buckets of five-gallon buckets. They had all kinds of posters with all these statistics about it. They dressed up in costume, and they challenged students to carry a full five-gallon bucket of water across the quad and back, and just said that was only a quarter mile. Imagine doing that for 5 miles every day. That's how you get water for your family, you know? And it struck a nerve, and they raised almost $600 in that day from people giving. You know, many of them not even believers, not even Christians, okay? So there's stuff like that. Well, every penny of that went to that project. It didn't go to administrative costs, doesn't pay a salary like mine. It went straight to that. That's the way the One Life is set up. Just want you to know that, okay? So there's a giving component. There's a going component for many of them. Not all of them, but most of them have avenues for you to plug in if you want to say, man, that's me. I got to help out some way. Eric, what's some of the coming, going components for you where you're at? How could, if somebody here just says, man, I'm on board, how can I come help you?
Yeah, and so in Mumbai, we've got a couple of projects, and one of them is one slum that you've heard about. Another one is like, we have like women's shelters, and so it's just, so on the website it says like one women's shelter. And crazy enough, because like so many people have given, now to be accurate, I mean, it still sounds better to have like one women's shelter, but as of next month, it'll be four women's shelters. So obviously...
No, we got to stay with the one.
Yeah, one, four women's shelter. Yeah, but it's just like, because people have been able to give, then it's just like we've been able to meet those needs. And it's all through, and to be real honest, I don't have a ton to do with the women's shelter. I mean, I'm a part of it, but it's all like my brothers in the Lord, like my Indian brothers who are doing it, and sisters too. And so, you know, we've got teams who are coming to just to love on those girls who are there. And then, but really like for the one slum project, we can have a lot of people come, different groups come. And just like you saw in the video earlier, like downstairs, then it's just like, you know, a lot of it's just like to go hang out, to tell Bible stories. You know, it's just like the Bible stories that a lot of us grew up with as kids in church, like these Sunday school stories, people have never heard. And they've never heard the meaning of it. They have no idea, but it's just like, Man, you think about, if you've never heard the story of Jesus feeding 5,000 people, or Jesus healing a blind man, man, that's a powerful story. Because we grew up with it, we kind of just take it for granted. It's like, oh yeah, and Jesus fed 5,000 people. You know, it's just like, but if somebody's never heard that, then it's an awesome way just to go and tell Bible stories. Yeah, and just to go into communities, do little sports days. There's a lot of different options just to go in and make an impact. And just to go and teach English. You don't have to be an English teacher, but just to go and just like do basic English with different kids in a slum. Then what that does is that our church planter who's working in those slums, then it makes them, like in the eyes of that community, it makes them a lot higher up. And it gives them a lot more value because they're the ones who brought in these foreigners to teach English. And so it supports the work that's continually going on. And so it's not just like a one-shot deal where we never see those people again. The whole point is so that we can follow up with those people and to make sure that when we say, hey, you know, when that group from Lexington came, they probably wouldn't remember Lexington, sorry. But it's just like, yeah, you know, they played with you guys. They had, you know, they taught you guys some English. What do you remember about like them telling you about Jesus? Do you remember any of those stories? What do you think about those stories? You know, and so you'd be sharing, and that's the crazy part is that you're sharing the gospel with people that have never heard the gospel. You know, there's like, they're not watching TV, there's no Christian radio station, you know, it's just like, you're it, you know? And so it's an awesome privilege. And then it's also just that burden to know, man, these people haven't heard.
Now, I wish I could tell you there's all these scholarships available and poop all you need to do, just let us know if you want to go and we'll send you. It's not that easy. There aren't really any free rides when it comes to doing mission trips and projects. Now, we will help you as best we can. The office I work in is there to take your calls, your emails, I don't know about texting, but hey, whatever, how we can correspond with you. And we kind of serve as a staging ground to send folks to people like here, okay, like yourself. So we help you. You go, I don't have a clue what to do first. You know, what do I do? You get in touch with us and we'll start working with you. Well, a real live human being will talk to you. Probably Angela Sanford, for instance, who works in our office and is kind of a One Life coordinator for us. And you might say, you know, I heard this guy at this Resolute conference and I'm just curious how I might follow up with that. What do I do? She'll start telling you, well, here's some of the opportunities we know about. What would work for you? What's your availability? That kind of thing. And we start you through that process. We always require someone to fill out an application. And that's simply because we want to screen people. We don't just let anybody go and work with Eric, okay? Nothing wrong with it. It's not to say we're scared or anything, but it's just a process that we follow to keep everything in order. And we ask you to fill out the application, tell us a little bit about yourself. We also ask you to give us references so we can follow up on that. And because it's a requirement these days, we do a background check, okay? We get through all that, and then we connect you to the field so that you can get on that train. We have a travel agent we work with that understands how we use students and works carefully with that. We know how to provide things like emergency insurance that will take care of you while you're over there. Stuff like that. IMB has a lot of ways for students to get to the field. Some of them are packaged. Like the program I run is called International World Changers. And it's a 1 to 2 week long project about 20 different locations in the world. And you sign up for that and you pay your money and we do everything else. We get your travel in order. We have leadership there for you. We put everything together, and it's from start to finish. We even send you materials and say, here, read this, do this before you come, okay? And we do that with whether you're coming as a group or as an individual. But we also have opportunities where we don't do all that. We just say, there he is, that's you, and we connect the dots and get out of the way, and you work it out. So we can do a lot of different things. So I want you to be aware of that. Do you have to be Southern Baptist? No. Not for everything we do. There are a few things, because money's involved on our part, that it has to be, you have to be a member of a Southern Baptist church. That's only fair, because Southern Baptist churches are paying my salary, they're paying for him to be on the field, see what I'm saying? And so if we're subsidizing a particular thing like Hands On, another program that's a semester long, and we're covering half the cost, then you have to either be a Southern Baptist or you have to pay the whole price. Okay? Does that make sense? But you don't have to be a Southern Baptist to engage with us. We work with folks from a lot of different denominations and backgrounds, and some of you are in churches you don't even know if it's a Southern Baptist church or not. Okay? We want to work with you. We want to be open to that and how God can use you. But I wanted to give you a little bit of that background, okay? I don't know what questions might be brewing in your mind, but I want to inject one more pastoral thought before it escapes me. When we talk about one life, somebody mentioned this earlier, I think of a few years back when the Army, be all you could be, and then you have, and somebody else, one of the other military forces was talking about, you have one shot at this, one life. And there's some connection with that, but we all know that in Christ we get to live forever. But we don't get to live in this particular life that we have forever. We have a set period of time that we're given, right? I mean, and you don't go back. You don't get to relive stuff. We're not going to get reincarnated. We don't get a second chance at opportunities that have gone by, okay? And so it's really important for us to measure all that out. But here's the thing I want you to not get. It is an urgent thing. There are things that need to be done, and we don't need to delay. But urgency, from a biblical perspective, is not necessarily hurry. Urgency doesn't mean you're in a hurry. It means you're going to make it a priority. Can I spell it out for you? Some of you might feel like, I got to hurry, I got to do it, I got to do it, you know. And you're zipping, and you're not really doing the things you really need to do to be really prepared and to do what God wants you to do. Okay? Urgency doesn't mean you rush through and we hurry up and send you to the field and then a few months later you crash and burn. There's a process. There's preparation to do, yes. But urgency doesn't mean that you delay and you just sort of let it come to you and you just sort of wait for life to happen, because that's not making it a priority, is it? When you make things a priority, what happens? Some things get chunked off your list so you can do this. So if you've got an exam tomorrow, well, not tomorrow, but you know, if you've got an exam Monday morning at 8 o'clock and half your grade is on that exam, what are you doing this weekend if you really care about this class? You're chunking a lot of stuff. You're not going to go sit at Starbucks for 2.5 hours chewing the fat with three of your sisters, right? You're going to be studying. Why? Because it's a priority. And if you haven't done it all, you're probably in a hurry too. But do you understand that priority means it moves to the top of your list? When we say one life, we're asking you, what really are your priorities in life? And are some of those really not worthy of what God's calling you to be and do? There's a lot of things competing for your time. And we live in a culture that says, you know, have it your way and do your thing and slow down and enjoy yourself. And if it says hurry about anything, it's hurry to another pleasure, hurry to another experience, you know, hurry to make sure you don't miss out on this deal. Hurry to get the next iPhone when it comes out. Hurry to hear the next group play at the concert. You know, those kind of things. And God is going, you know, in the big scheme of things, those things aren't really priorities at all. And so that's what we're hoping you're doing, is processing what's important, what's really important, and having to fight through the clutter of our culture that can really confuse you, okay? Here, talk to us a little bit about the victories, you know, the things that just light your fire, get you up, you're about to get on a plane and go back another 20 hours of flying or something like that. Why, and besides your family waiting on you, I know, what drives you to go back, and what are you looking forward to, and share some of those kind of victories with us.
Yeah, so, you know, and we were talking about just like having your one life and making that one life matter, you know, you know, just to talk about that for a second, it's just like, you know, when one thing that's been drilled in on me is, wherever you are, be all there. Wherever you are, be all there. You know, and so you guys all have one life. I've got one life in this earth. And I want to make it matter. And God has all of you exactly where you are right now for a reason. And so, right, I'm totally biased and I want everybody in the world to go reach the nations. But I agree with Dr. Piper, that's not everybody's calling. Where is it that you guys are supposed to be? And so if you guys are in school right now and you look around, it's just like, man, I've never shared my faith with a guy who sits next to me a couple times a week. You know, my coworker, I work at Starbucks. I used to work at Starbucks, you know. Then it's just like, man, I need to share with them. Because God has me working at Starbucks and that guy working at Starbucks right now for a reason. And so how are you going to make your one life matter when it comes time on Monday morning, Monday afternoon, Monday night? You know, and so as you look and you go and you think about, okay, what does God want me to do? Then you want to be intentional about reaching that. And just like Dr. Piper was saying, just like George was saying, it means like when you have that holy ambition, it means putting other things to the side. You know, and so I live in Mumbai. I live in a whole other country. And so it means, so if I'm living there, that means I'm putting things to the side. Right? I don't know what's going on in America half the time. You know, it's just like, and that's all right. Because God has me there for a reason. You know, and it's awesome, though, like to see. So I'll tell you something that's really cool. So like we have, so the Southern Baptists have like a journeyman program. It's like a 2-year program. And right after we got to Mumbai, then there's 2 journey girls who came. And another journeyman who is in another city, he said, hey, let me introduce you to these local guys in Mumbai because I'm about to leave the country, you know, to go back home. And so they made that introduction, and my journey girls just like poured into these people. And then like we had another group, but those journey girls left, and before that they passed on those relationships. And now, and it's that happened a few different times. And they've been training them, they've been pouring into these people. And I'm hardly involved with that. Like, I mean, these journey girls are just like fresh out of college, you know, like they're, or just been out of college a couple years. And they're training people. They're teaching people. They're teaching churches. They're leading groups, you know, like college groups, like how to reach other people. And just a couple weeks ago, one of the guys that they've been working with that church, he's just like, you know, Eric, I want to work with you. I want to be a partner with you. And that's what we've been praying for 3.5 years. It's just for local people just to say, man, I'm all in. You know, and so like that's awesome for us because Mumbai is not going to be reached because Eric Underwood is there. Mumbai is not going to be reached because a group from Lexington came in. Mumbai is going to be reached because we're raising up local leaders. Now, am I a part of that plan? I am, 100%. Is the group from Lexington part of that plan? Well, that's for God to decide. But you know what I mean? Like, but it's all our part. You know, and so just like, but it's awesome just to see, have groups come in and just reach out and just like to go into these neighborhoods and find people who've never heard the gospel and who believe. You know, we wish we could say we give you a money back guarantee, but we can almost say that. But like, if you spend a week in India, in most places of India, and you're out there sharing the gospel, somebody's gonna believe. You know, and people, it's a spiritual place. Man, I can walk up to somebody, it's just like, hey, how's it going? What's your name? And she's like, oh, you know, sorry, are you a Hindu? Are you a Muslim? You know, like, and that's a normal question. I have people ask me that question and they don't even say, hey, what's your name? They're just like, oh, I think that you're a Muslim. And it's just like, no, I just kind of haven't shaved in a while. You know, like, you know, they're just like, and then you just have this whole, it's like, no, actually I'm a follower of Jesus. And we don't say Christian, because if you ask people, well, what do Christians do? Then they say, oh, well, Christians are the ones who sleep around and they're the ones who are always drinking, you know. So we learn quickly, oh, we don't want to say we're a Christian. That's not what, yeah, it's the exact opposite of what we want to portray. So I'm a follower of Jesus, you know, and people come and they want to hear. People are hungry. Do you know why they're hungry? Because God's working in their heart. But they don't believe because they haven't heard. They haven't heard because no one's gone to tell them. And so it's an awesome privilege to be a part of what God is already doing. And, you know, I'm no better than anybody else. I am a poor, wretched sinner who, praise God, is saved by grace. You know, and so And it's God has given me that the awesome, awesome privilege to be in Mumbai, India. I'm no better, and and I'm just glad to be a part of that work. And I want you guys to use your one life in Kentucky, Ohio, wherever you guys are, Wisconsin, Michigan, sorry. That it's just like, use your one life there, right now, because that's where God has you.
We got one more component we want to tell you about, and then we'll just open it up for a few minutes of questions in case you have any. Don't want to keep going. I know you're wanting to get a little lunch or whatever. But on the One Life site is some prayer resources. One that we developed over this past year was 10 Days of Sacrifice, and it zeroes in on South Asia, which is kind of code language for India. And it starts out with just giving you a 10-day process of taking a few minutes each day and praying specifically over people groups in India, over what some of the work that's going on in India. And that's real easy for you to do, okay? But it goes beyond that, and it says, okay, you're doing 10 days of praying, 10 minutes a day or something like that. Hey, would you start thinking about maybe giving like $10 so we can purchase Bibles to give? And so here's a website where you could donate $10 and it'll buy Bibles for folks that live in India that would not have one. Oh, by the way, how about thinking about spending 10 days overseas? What would that look like in your life? You get what I'm talking about. So there's kind of a progression there. If you really don't even have a clue where to start with what we're talking about, you might want to download that 10 Days of Sacrifice booklet and just let that be something that helps you take what we're talking about to another level, a personal level of engagement. I can just tell you, though, prayer is one of the elements we tend to talk the least about, but it's probably the most important thing we do.
For sure.
You know, I think Eric could probably speak more to this than I can, but I can tell you a personal experience in my life where I recognized maybe more than I ever had before of what it meant to be prayed for. I got cancer about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and I had to go through chemotherapy twice. And my church family began to lift me up in prayer. And I'd been prayed for before, you know, and I experienced that, but oh my goodness. The experience of having hundreds of people pray for me was amazing. Because even on some of my worst days of going through treatment, it was like I was walking on air. I still fulfilled many of my responsibilities as a minister in my church, and I couldn't believe how God just gave me extra energy, extra power, extra unction in my messages. And I quickly recognized this is not me. This is the power of the Holy Spirit, and that's thanks to so many people praying for me. When later my doctor said, we're done with you, you're going to be okay, you know, celebration, thank you, Jesus. And so folks turned their focus and began to pray for other things, as they supposedly, it was like, whoa. It was like the support I had was gone. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden I realized, wow. For years, in our churches, many of our churches had the practice of praying for missionaries, praying for people on the field, and it was a pretty good discipline. I hate to tell you this, that discipline is just about gone. It's just about evaporated. And I remember testimonies of missionaries that would say on their birthday, they knew people were praying for them, and they could just tell the difference, you know? Eric, talk to us about what prayer means to you, and especially coming from somebody like these guys.
Yeah, you know, like the longer I'm in India, you know, like when you first go there, then it's just like, oh man, yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to reach all the lost people. And the longer I'm there, I realize, man, if I am not in God's word every day, if I'm not praying to God every day, and if I don't have people praying for the work and the Spirit to move, then man, it just doesn't work. Like I just realized the longer I'm there, the more important prayer is. You know, it's just like, you know, a lot of times it's just like, you know, somebody shares something and it's just like, oh, okay, I'll pray for you. It's just like, we don't even do it. You know, like we're telling somebody that we're going to pray for them. We don't even do it. And it's just like, man, do I want to deal with these problems or am I going to let God deal with these problems? You know, and it's just like going overseas. I mean, it's a crazy thought for a lot of us, you know, and maybe if you've gone, but you're thinking about, man, maybe I should go for a longer amount of time. And we're wrestling with it, and it's just like, man, forget wrestling and just give it to God. You know, and a couple, you know, it was like a year and a half ago, then I had the government coming after me. And I just had to realize, man, God, you're in control. No matter what I do, it doesn't matter. You're the one who's in control. And if you have brought me here, you can take me away or you can let me be here because you're in control of it all. And of course, I mean, I had every single person I could praying for us. And it's just, and by God's sovereign grace, then I'm glad that the prayers were answered for me and my family to stay. And so it's just like, but to move somebody's heart, I mean, to go from like, so I mean, Hindus, they believe that there's 33 million gods. And so then when I say, hey, there's one true God, His Son is Jesus Christ, and there's no way to God except through Jesus. He is the way, the truth, and the life. Man, that's a huge mind shift to go from thinking that everybody's a God, that everything's a God, and it's only through the Spirit moving and through prayers for that person that their mind can change. And we've seen, I have volunteer teams come, and we've seen people healed. Like, and these are like people who grew up in Southern Baptist churches who don't really even pray for people to get healed, you know, but it's just like they, in faith, pray for people to get healed. And it happened in front of their eyes. It's awesome because God does that. That's His business. Can I heal somebody? Uh-uh. I can help them, but man, I can pray for them.
Well, I wish we could get into a theology of praying, but I just want to encourage you to begin thinking about that. That's not the sidelines, folks. That's the game. It's when you get out there in the game and you have it prayed, you're about to get hit big time. You're about to get run over because you're out there dealing with spiritual realities.
Yes.
And you're acting like you're the big dog and God's over there going, let me know how that works for you. Right? And so, you know, when we throw this one life at you, we're asking you to get into the big time. But the last thing we want you to do is jump in there with both feet and act like you're it, that God needs you. You know what I mean? The God's up there wringing His hands going, oh my gosh, who will go for me? Who will I send? What am I going to do? Oh no, oh no. I don't know what your God's like. That's not the God of the Bible. It's not the God I know. God I know says, man, I got this. Now the question is, do you want in with me? But if you want in with me, it's with me. It's not you jumping out there and leading the way. I, for a long time, have been God's counselor. Yes, sir. George Seiler has helped God figure things out. I have told God, God, I have a great idea. You need to do this. Can you imagine how insulting that is? As if He needs ideas. As if He needs, you know, me to tell Him, I've been watching, I think we ought to do this, Lord. You know, so now, does that mean I just shut up and do nothing? No, it means I engage with Him in prayer and go, God, what are you thinking? Where are you at work, Lord? How do I get in on that? How do you want to use me? God, you know, I think you want to do this, but you're just waiting on me to ask. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. That's what I'm talking about wrestling.